Welcome back to the Pod of DC. I'm your host, Rick Bernstein. I hope you're having a fine, fine day. Well, spring fundraising season is well underway, and since 2020, it's been my privilege to assist in creating and executing fundraising events for not-for-profit organizations. One organization I had the good fortune of connecting with in 2023 was Together International, a 501c3 organization dedicated to challenging the entrepreneurial ecosystem by supporting founders with disabilities, reshaping the narrative around disability, and also viewing disability as a competitive advantage for businesses. On this episode of the pod, I catch up with Together's founder and chief executive officer, Diego Mariscal. We start by discussing the close relationship Diego had with disabilities rights activist Judy Heumann and the significance of their symbiotic relationship, along with Diego's perspective on mentorship. Diego delves into the stigma surrounding disability in the workplace and the environment surrounding disability, citing his experiences at a UN conference with proud disabled business leaders as one of his light bulb moments and inspiring the start of Together. Diego shares the journey of starting Together, including the novel ways he pitched and funded its launch, which ultimately resulted in a strategic partnership with Google. From offering the first and only online accelerator program for founders with disabilities to hosting monthly cohorts and startup meetings, Diego and the Together International team are tirelessly working to support and empower disabled individuals in pursuing entrepreneurship and achieving their goals. So without further ado, here he is, Diego Mariscal. Enjoy. You mentioned Judy. Who else did you really lean on as a mentor, somebody who kind of helped motivate you to take on these initiatives?
There's countless people, and I continue to do that. I think my default is when I'm facing a challenge, I try to get two or three different perspectives, whether from a board member, from a team member, from a community member. I actually, the word mentor doesn't resonate well with me because I think the relationships that I've had over my life of quote-unquote mentor-mentee have always been two-sided, right? The same way that Judy taught me and we would speak every day, that same way that she would teach me about things, I would challenge her thinking, right? And I would get her thinking about when we would have
100%
disagreements about things, and she could not handle social media or, you know, or tech products to save her life. She would call
you don't say,
like,
that generation.
Right. She would call me and say, you know, how do I do this? How do I do that?
Oh my gosh. And so, aren't we all trying to figure that out? Yeah. Right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so it was always this symbiotic relationship of you're teaching me things and I'm teaching you things as well. And I think even with people that continue to be quote-unquote mentors to me, I'm continuously teaching them as well. And so I think what has served me well is that the relationships I've had have always been symbiotic. And I try, and this was a networking tip that I tried to also develop over the years. When I'm talking to a mentor or somebody who I'm seeking advice from, always ending the call with, "Great, thank you so much. How can I help you?" And then that question, not saying, "Is there anything I can do to help you?" Because that question is always going to be, "Oh, no," or "Let me think about that." But if you say, "How is it that I can help you?" then they really critically have to think about how might you be helpful. And then you begin that conversation of a true relationship and a true partnership as opposed to a one-sided relationship.
So I want to touch on that because, wow, I mean, thinking about, it does sound very one-sided, right? Mentor-mentee. Mm-hmm. I don't know that word. What is that symbiotic back and forth bi-directional benefit in that relationship? So what would you call that? So you're having a call with X, let's say with, you know, Judy's learning from you, you're learning from her. So she is just a colleague, would you say, or just a fellow entrepreneur, fellow leader?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, out of respect and out of admiration, I would perhaps call her a mentor. But I think for me, more so, I get a little skeptical when I hear, you know, mentorship programs or things like that and the other. Most important mentors in my life have been unofficial, you know, people that have unofficially become my mentors. It hasn't been this program, you know, of people that have shaped me. And it's funny, Judy and I, we were sort of co-keynotes on a National Mentorship Coalition for Disabled People. And they wanted us to talk about our relationship together. And both of us agree on the same point of most of your mentors, in my view and based on my experience, are going to be friendships and relationships that you grow to admire and grow together as you get to know each other. And there are moments where Judy was certainly a mentor to me, but there are also moments where I was a mentor to her.
Yeah, I definitely hear you as far as there needs to be some better way of kind of recognizing that, but also instilling that reciprocity or, okay, how can I help you at the end of that's the first time, honestly, in talking with others in their views of leadership and how they've led or how they've been led, that kind of thing. I can't say I've heard someone say that at the end, like, okay, well, now what, how can I help you in return? This is just something that's kind of an X factor that you carry.
Yes, and right. It's something that I sort of intuitively do. But then as I started to see the value that that brought, there were moments where I was like, you know, I want to make sure. And frankly, I think, you know, the gesture of creating symbiotic relationships and sort of the value that you bring to the table is important. It's also a way to recognize your own worth as an entrepreneur, right? Meaning that if you're a small entrepreneur that's just getting started, you also have experience, you have time, you have resources. And so by saying, how can I help you, and allowing them to give you an opportunity for you to help them or for me to help them, it also showcases my talents, my knowledge, my expertise. And so, you know, and sometimes people will say, let me get back to you, or thank you so much for the offer, I don't really need anything at this time, or whatever the case may be. But it's that sentiment of, look, I am also an expert in my field. I want to help you succeed.
Over 80 startups participating in raising over $65 million in investment, revenue, and acquisition. And this was, what, since 2019 or so?
Yeah. Together was formalized in 2012 as an organization, but we really didn't start accelerator programs and entrepreneurship programs since about 2019 or so. Back when I was a freshman in college, I started reading a book about the disability civil rights movement, particularly in the States. And in that book, it talked about how the disabling factor of a disability wasn't necessarily the condition itself, but the surrounding environments around us. And as I read that book, this was one of my first times in the US, coming in from a different country. I could not believe what I was reading. It was the first time that thoughts that were in my head and had been in my head for a long time, I was actually reading them on a piece of paper. And then on top of that, a few months, I think, even within the first year of me coming to the States, I had the amazing opportunity to go to the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in New York, at the UN headquarters. And it was the first time in my life that I met people from all over the world who were unapologetically disabled and frankly, at a very senior level positions, you know, in their field. And I was so blown away by that because it's something that I think instinctively I had in my mind of disability is not something that I'm ashamed of. I didn't grow up being ashamed of it. I actually kind of grew up using it to my favor, right? Whether it's trying to get attention from, you know, somebody that I liked or advocacy past or X, Y, Z. But to see people talk about disability from an environment perspective and talk about how the discrimination that comes about regarding disability has nothing to do with the disability itself and has everything to do with the environment surrounding disability. That to me was a huge turning point. And I remember leaving that conference and thinking, there's gotta be a way that we package this message and distribute it in the masses so that it's not just kind of the elite or the few that get invited to these UN conferences that experience this message. There's got to be a way that we convey that. And that's how Together was born. That's the idea behind flipping the narrative and changing the way people think about disability. No substantial changes in how we are producing and supporting disabled people to pursue employment have been made. Really, I mean, people have been trying this the same thing over and over again. And so it became really clear to me, and again, maybe this is because I was an outsider, that there needed to be something substantially different, that the current system of employment and promoting employment for disabled people was fundamentally broken. And so I think that is also another reason why entrepreneurship is so appealing, because it's so different from what has traditionally been offered to the disability community.
And it goes so hand in hand too with how your approach to life, thinking outside the box.
Right. And, you know, and I often say that, right? As disabled people, we have to figure out how to get dressed, how to drive, how to communicate. And we innately have an entrepreneurship mindset. The reality is, yes, that is true by nature and by default of having a disability, but not everyone that has a disability has had the opportunity to figure those things out, right? Or to be independent in that way for a variety of reasons, for paternalism, for, you know, lack of support from their family, their parents, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yes, it is an innate capability that we have just by the very nature of having a disability. That doesn't mean that we don't need the necessary infrastructure to be able to develop that muscle.
Right.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about how it's evolved from that initial kernel of establishing together, just really with that mindset of flipping the narrative, to where it stands today, again, being in 15 countries, over 600 entrepreneurs involved. How has that evolution taken place? Because that's quite a bit of scaling in the last several years.
Oh my God, and we're hoping to double this year. I tell people that it's been the 10-year overnight success. It certainly has been a labor of love in many ways. On a personal level or business development level, I did everything. I, you know, as a way to make ends meet, I tutored in Spanish and math. People with disabilities, we have a thing called SSI, which is Social Security Supplementary Income. If you make below a certain amount of money, you get government benefits. And so I got a check for $700. And also Vocational Rehabilitation Services, which is another government agency, was paying for my tuition and was paying for my room and board and was also paying for food. And so I literally put those $700 just for together, right? And to get started. And then I would tutor Spanish and math to make ends meet. And I Airbnb'd my apartment and found, you know, a little bit of success renting out one bed. And so somehow I thought it would be a good idea to go from one bed to seven beds. And so that helped me, you know, not only make ends meet, but also fund together a little bit. I remember we were on a campaign and we were running a crowdfunding campaign. And this was back when you could use Uber Pool. And so I would get on an Uber Pool from one side of the city to the other side of the city to pitch people. I wouldn't go anywhere. I just would go from one side to the other. And it would just be my opportunity to get in the car with strangers and pitch them on what I was trying to do. And that's how we funded our first campaign. And then it wasn't until all of those compounded things that a person from Google actually paid attention to what we were doing and our little programs. And then at that point, we had some traction. We had a couple hundred members. And she said, this is really great. There was a donor that had seen our work and said, you know, I want to fund a cohort. And so she funded the first cohort, tiny, tiny pilot program. And then after that, the woman from Google was like, we want to help you fund this at a larger scale. They gave us our first big check. And from there, you know, we were off to the races. But it took nearly 10 years to get off the ground, really.
And you're just getting started. You're getting this momentum. You kick off this accelerator and then boom, COVID hits.
Right. It actually worked to our advantage because we were doing things in person. And so that limit the amount of scale that we could have. When we had to move virtual because of COVID, that actually helped us. So we grew to 600 entrepreneurs pretty quickly because of COVID. So I would say actually COVID was helpful to us.
That's one of those delicate things when you think about the impact it had on people negatively, but also positively. So you have these cohorts in the fall and the spring. You have startup meetups, which I was able to attend a few months back. And then these venture lab programs. Right. Which one that you put out there do you feel is been the most accessible, you feel like, where someone who finds your program says, oh, that one could be one to start if they were looking and they found you guys?
Well, it depends on the stage of their business, right? Certainly our staple program is the accelerator, the growth program, which is 10 weeks for people who already have a proof of concept, who are looking for put kind of fuel to the fire. If someone's looking for just bounce ideas off, I'm starting my journey as an entrepreneur, certainly Meetup and our community platform are the way to go. And then we have a program called Venture Labs, which is a pre-accelerator program for those who are very, very early stage. And we have more stuff coming down the pipes. We just announced an apprenticeship program, which would be a collaboration with the Department of Labor to certify the first apprenticeship program for founders with disabilities, where they would get a certification from the Department of Labor that they've gained all these skills. And hopefully that will increase their chances of getting employment and or, you know, additional support. The best way for you to get plugged into the ecosystem is for you to apply to one of our programs, whether that's Venture Labs, whether that is the accelerator program. And we're always running programs. You can always email hello at together. That's together with a number 2, GETHER-international.org. I see those emails when they come through, and I can always point you in the direction of the right program according to the stage of business that you're at. In terms of specific programming, meaning the accelerator or Venture Labs, you do have to go through an application and you may or may not get selected. We're always wanting to be engaged and to be successful. So our job is for you to be successful.
Yeah. Now, there's an interesting tie-in between supporting individuals with disabilities for entrepreneurship and the philanthropy around supporting that, but also how it dovetails into disability rights and standing up for disability rights. Kind of touch on that a little bit about how the two work hand in hand.
Traditionally, disability has been viewed as an unfortunate set of circumstances, right? Oh, poor, look at this person, how unfortunate, therefore we need to help them, right? And we are not saying that at all. And so we're saying, look, because this person has a disability, they're a competitive advantage, they can be a competitive advantage for business. And so therefore you should support them for economic growth, et cetera, et cetera. So it certainly has been in some ways challenging educating the public and specifically the philanthropic public of, we don't want your pity. We want your support. We want your investment in order to flip the way people think about disability. Mm-hmm. Given all the stigma surrounding disability, there's not even comprehensive data on how much investment entrepreneurs with disabilities get. The most recent one I'm aware of looked at 0% for founders with disabilities when it comes to venture capital funding. So there's a real challenge in terms of teaching the philanthropy space, but there's also a real opportunity for people that want to be leaders in this space to support a movement that goes beyond a charity model. We're talking about economic growth. We're talking about economic prosperity. By supporting entrepreneurs with disabilities, you're also supporting economic growth for everyone. So,
absolutely. And a quick plug on the first ever fund.
Yeah. The first ever fund for founders with disabilities. You know, I was talking about the fact that there's no funding for founders with disabilities. And so we want to fix that by creating the first ever fund. And the good thing about this fund is that it's a philanthropic fund. So the donor/investor is getting a win-win no matter what. 90% of investments will fail and the investor will never see a return or a gain on their money. In this case, 100% of the donations will get some sort of benefit, if nothing else, a tax deduction. And they will also get a right of first refusal in subsequent rounds of funding if they choose to invest in subsequent rounds of funding with the founders that we support. So this is, we're trying to raise $5 million of philanthropic capital. And we are looking for either one or two anchor donors at $1 million, give or take each, to be able to anchor this and really move it forward. It's also an innovative way to do philanthropy, because what we're saying is, look, we want to launch this fund. Through the fund, we'll do what's called program-related investments, which means we'll invest in these founders. It's a legitimate tax code that the IRS allows us to do. And so we, with that, those funds, reinvest the gains of the investment, which means that we won't, in perpetuity, be asking you for money. You make a donation now, and we may ask you for a donation, you know, a couple years, maybe 2-3 years down the line. But in theory, those investment dollars that you're giving us as donations should be able to return investments to not only continue to invest in entrepreneurs, but also grow. So it is also an innovative way to look at sustainable philanthropy, where you're not just making a donation and sort of next year we're going to be hitting you for the same amount. If we do our jobs well, which so far we have a track record of doing very, very well, that money should grow substantially. And so we should be able to impact more and more people. So it isn't just the $1 million that you're providing. That $1 million is going to turn, or whatever amount you're giving, is going to turn 10, 20x later down the line.
And that can come in the form of participating, finding those donors, donating online, also maybe attending a Flipping the Narrative event like you guys had in December in DC.
Yes, exactly. You know, 90% of disabilities are hidden, right? Some of the most successful entrepreneurs like Elon Musk, Richard Branson, all the investors in Shark Tank have come out and said that they have a disability of some sort. But typically that happens after they become rich and famous, right?
Right.
And so the other thing is, like, imagine what would happen if we were able to support people before that happens. You know, how many more people we could support. And so this opportunity is really for everybody who wants to see this shift, whether it's somebody with a disability who has that type of capital that they want to donate, or for somebody who's non-disabled who, you know, wants to make a difference in the space.
And it all starts at together-international.org with a 2 in the front.
Yes. The name actually evolved from a program I created in Mexico and was focused on educating students. And when I moved to the States, I thought we were going to expand that program. And so that's why we attached the international to it. And so it's been like that ever since. And frankly, the abbreviation 2G is also really interesting, because I see it as like second generation advocacy, second generation entrepreneurship. So we've talked a lot about, you know, what it means to evolve the name. Stay tuned for when that happens.
Very cool. We definitely will. So, Diego, I just appreciate the opportunity that we connected several months back and that we got the opportunity to be together at the Flipping the Narrative event in December in DC. And once again, everybody, the first step to really learn more about Together International, visit www.together-international.org. Learn all about Diego, the team, the mission, the impact, the programs. You can find it all right there. And if you are an individual who would like to take part in these programs, again, look out for that application process. These programs, they seem to run year-round, right? So there's an opportunity any month. So thank you, Diego.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this.
Yeah, likewise, Diego. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you all for listening and supporting the Pod of DC. I'm your host, Rick Bernstein, and we'll talk soon. The Pod of DC is a Voice of DC production. To catch up on previous episodes and to follow and subscribe, type in The Pod of DC wherever you get your podcasts.